This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good afternoon and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight and you can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball by locking in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Well, welcome into the show. Saturday, October 26th, Halloween just around the corner. The World Series is underway. Game one all done. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But how about that? The Dodgers and the Yankees. It's Commissioner Rob Manfred's dream of World Series, right? You got the two biggest major media markets in the world, well, at least in America, involved in the World Series. How about it, MLB? You did it. A lot to talk about on the show this afternoon. A couple of things we're going to get to. Obviously, we're going to deal with some of the news yesterday, released just yesterday from guys like John Heyman and Bruce Levine about the White Sox managerial search. We've got some names, some sifting and winnowing, it sounds like, some candidates being dismissed from the search, according to reports. Evan Grant of the Dallas Morning News had one name that is not in the mix anymore, and it's a name that we bioed in last week's show, and a couple guys who have emerged as leading candidates, according to John Heyman. We'll get to that. We'll also talk a little bit about first base for the White Sox. You know the drill here on White Sox Weekly. Right about this time of year, with the World Series either getting started or coming to an end, prior to free agency really kicking into gear, I like to spend a little bit of time on each episode kind of going through one position at a time, sometimes groups of positions, but trying to drill down on one position at a time and reviewing what happened at that spot and previewing what may happen at that spot in 2025, in the next year. And I think this offseason, previewing it what's to come may be one of the more difficult things to do at this point in the offseason. We may have to revisit each and every one of these positions later on in the offseason to kind of identify where the White Sox are headed, because if Chris Getz and the White Sox front office wants to, this can be as blank a slate, really, as any roster in baseball in 2025. Sure, there are incumbents, but unfortunately, given the, you know, the 41 and 121 record and the underperformance that that bulwarked all of that record, all those 121 losses, there's a lot of opportunities to kind of change things around a little bit, give looks to players that, you know, either aren't in the organization now or minor leaguers who'd be coming up if the White Sox are looking to cut guaranteed money, all that kind of stuff that comes along with the rebuild process, which the White Sox are assuredly in. Let's get to the managerial stuff, though. John Heyman of the New York Post had this report on Friday morning. Either that or was overnight Thursday into Friday. Here's how the report goes. It's just a couple of notes in his Friday column. And he writes that Will Venable, George Lombard, and Phil Nevin are seen as the leading candidates for the White Sox managerial job. Will Venable, if you remember, and this is back to me now, this is not John Heyman, I'm paraphrasing, giving you a little context here in case you forgot. Will Venable is the Rangers bench coach and seen largely as the heir apparent to Bruce Bochy in Texas. But like we talked about, the heir apparent in baseball, in sports, everywhere, shoot, even in business, the heir apparent is only the heir apparent until he's named the actual successor. Other than that, things can happen. Former Angels manager Phil Nevin, who is the only one in all of these potential managerial candidates, save Buck Showalter, who we'll have a note on here in just a second, with real managerial experience. And then Tigers bench coach George Lombard, who we spent a lot of time bioing in last week's show. In fact, if you want a refresher on any one of these guys, go download the ESPN Chicago app if you haven't already. And if you haven't, come on, download the ESPN Chicago app. You can download each and every one of our White Sox weekly shows. And I have gone through every managerial candidate that's got a credible name out there, or I should say a credible report behind his name, and tried to do the bio of the guy as best as I possibly can. And we'll do so much more once we get to, you know, just a couple of candidates or maybe even a manager here shortly. Sounds like, from what I can gather and from what other reporters who know a heck of a lot have kind of detailed, it really feels like the White Sox would like to go to the GM meetings here in just a couple of weeks with a manager in tow. So shortly after the World Series and up to the winter meetings, it sounds like it would be uncomfortable. Well, I mean, listen, it just would be uncomfortable to go to the general manager meetings and not have a manager, not know that part of the organization yet. So you would imagine that that's, you know, while not a hard deadline, certainly something that's in the mind of Chris Getz and the rest of the White Sox front office. Anyway, back to John Heyman. So he writes, Phil Nevin, George Lombard, and Will Venable, the three leading candidates for the White Sox managerial job. Back to Heyman. Venable is a guy White Sox GM Chris Getz always liked. Would be interesting to see him take the White Sox job a year after turning down the Mets for an interview. And then Heyman has the parenthetical. It says the Mets did great with Carlos Mendoza anyway, coming over from the New York Yankees. He was the bench coach there. Heyman continues. The White Sox have considered Buck Showalter, too. He's known as being a turnaround artist, but it's uncertain if he'd go. Now some other reports, too, that kind of fill in the rest of the mix here. So we've got three finalists, according to John Heyman, or I shouldn't say finalists. It's leading candidates for the job. Will Venable, George Lombard, and Phil Nevin. Evan Grant of the Dallas Morning News reported earlier this week that Rangers offensive coordinator and bench coach and associate coach Donnie Ecker is not in the mix anymore. I really liked the profile of Donnie Ecker the more we read about him and talked about him on last week's show. But I mentioned that while there's a whole lot of upside, especially from the offensive side of things with Ecker, you know, the White Sox having a lot of their pitching infrastructure with the arrow pointed straight up, the way Brian Bannister and Josh Barfield and Chris Getz and Ethan Katz have all kind of worked together to really show you some of the bright side of this White Sox organization is on the pitching side of things. You need somebody or some buddies to come in and perform that same kind of experiment or push that same kind of envelope on the offensive side of things. And Ecker's resume was pretty incredible to me. However, in terms of the managerial experience, the coaching experience, that side of thing, Ecker certainly, of the list of candidates that we've gone through, had the least experience on that side of things. And as has been, you know, talked about by other White Sox beat reporters and other White Sox spots, it would be difficult to get Ecker from the Rangers over to the White Sox in just a similar role, right? I mean, the Rangers, even though reports are out that they're going to try and cut payroll and get underneath the luxury tax for the coming season, the CBT tax, they're still a team that should be able to compete for an AL West as the Astros continue to, I think, slide back a little bit and have to adjust things on the payroll side their own. The Rangers certainly have a solid up the middle and high-performing young players as well that kind of fill out the rest of that roster. One other report to Bruce Levine of 670 The Score. He's been on this name for a little while. Yes, we credited them. That's fine. Bruce is a darn good reporter. Clayton McCullough of the Dodgers, the bench coach there, is still in the mix. So, according to putting all these reports together, Donnie Ecker no longer being considered. Again, all this, according to reports, the team will not confirm or deny any of these things until a manager is named. And even then, you're not really going to hear some of these names after that. Sounds like Clayton McCullough, Dodgers bench coach, Will Venable, Rangers bench coach, George Lombard, Tigers bench coach, and Phil Nevin, former Angels managers, are four of the leading candidates for the White Sox. Now, one name that's not been discussed much in any of these reports is Skip Schumacher, the former manager of the year in the National League with the Miami Marlins. We've gone through his situation pretty intently here on White Sox Weekly. I'm not sure what that means or doesn't mean. I think you talk to a lot of people around baseball, and it sounds like Schumacher could have the job if he wanted it. And that's, you know, whether that was the Reds job, although Terry Francona swept in and took it, a lot of people thought, well, that could be Skip's pretty easily, or the White Sox job, or if any of these postseason teams that have made their run decides to jump ship. A lot of people had talked about the Dodgers. Boy, if the Dodgers don't make the World Series, you think Dave Roberts stays? That'd be a great place for Skip Shoemaker. I could agree with that, although I don't really understand why they'd bounce Dave Roberts. It's been a fraught relationship for reasons sometimes beyond my understanding, though I get that bullpen management in the playoffs in years prior hadn't been Roberts' best card. But, you know, after game one last night, we'll get to that later. Anyway, I think Skip Shoemaker would definitely still be in the mix here. I can't say that I'm reporting that one way or the other or definitely have that of my own, but it feels like it's far too early still to count that out. Now, on the other side of things, those are the names we know of or that have been made public by some reports and some sources by guys like Levine and Grant and Heyman. But it's worth noting that because of the long break, I mean, what was it? Almost like a week between the AL and NLCS series and the World Series here last night, the White Sox would have had a chance to interview Clayton McCullough, the Dodgers bench coach, and Danny Lehman, who is another candidate that had been reported in some other spots. We detailed him last week on the show if they'd wanted to. So I would guess it's safe to assume that while we've got reports of Will Venable having interviewed or having an interview set up, you could probably figure that McCullough and Lehman, if they made it to that stage of like that in-person interview, that those likely happened over the last week, especially if the White Sox want to keep to the timeline that everybody seems to think they'll keep to, and that's hiring their manager before the GM meetings coming up here in early November. So that's the latest on the managerial spot. I guess if you looked at me and said, hey, who do you like of those names? Clayton McCullough, Will Venable, George Lombard, Phil Nevin. Who do you like? Who would you prefer? That kind of thing. I think all of those names, and we've gone through them all, have some draw to them. I had, you know, prior when Lombard was a candidate for the White Sox job that went to Pedro Grifol a couple of years ago, I don't know that I'd done my research on him, and I as well as I should have. Shame on me. But I really liked reading about George Lombard's background and coaching philosophy and his ability to bond with players, all that kind of stuff. Will Venable, from guys that I know in this game, Will Venable has a great reputation as the next great manager. And I think that while it'll be difficult for any team, the White Sox included, to pry him away from what seems to be his preferred position now, right, succeeding Bruce Bochy in Texas, I think Venable would be a great hire. McCullough is still a little interesting to me. I love the player dev background that he's got with the Dodgers. That's a huge point for the future of the White Sox. I hope that they get a guy that has player development in their background. And that leaves Phil Nevin, who certainly has been a minor league manager and been for a long time and is therefore a part of player development. He's a bit more old school when it comes to his approach to baseball itself. We'll see if that'll be, you know, I mean, guys change, right? AJ Hinch was not the same manager in Houston as he was in San Diego and doesn't really seem to be, or seems to be a different manager now in Detroit than he even was in Houston. Guys can change, you know, just to point out one. But I would probably put Nevin on the other side of that thing. Still, it's clear that Nevin is a guy that is going to make sure that major league roster is taking care of business. You know, that is absolutely something that Nevin has as part of the calling card and certainly a good thing. I like the names. You know, I like the group that the White Sox have seemingly been interested in and interviewed and has now, according to John Heyman, Bruce Levine, and Evan Grant in different ways. Guys like Will Venable, George Lombard, Phil Nevin, and Clayton McCullough as still in the mix, if not leading candidates for the White Sox managerial job. Some interesting stuff. So that's the managerial search as we know it now. Certainly news to come here over the next week or so as the World Series gets closer and closer to its conclusion and we get closer and closer to the GM meetings here in November. When we come back, we'll start digging in on first base. There are some names you know, some names you need to know, and a lot of changes that could be on the way for the White Sox at a position that has not seen a whole lot of change really for decades for this franchise. So we'll get into that when we come back here on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 at the White Sox Party Area. Reserve your group outing today. Get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Welcome back to the show. Spent the first segment talking about the managerial candidates, as it's been reported by a whole bunch of national and local reporters. I'm going to go back and listen to it. Download the ESPN Chicago app, in case you missed it, I guess. Download the ESPN app, and you can get each and every episode of White Sox Weekly right there for you. Every year, we do a bit of a review and preview, positionally, for the White Sox. Take a look back at what had happened and what might be happening in the year to come, 2025, for the White Sox. And I wanted to start with first base this year. There are a lot of tendrils, more than you might think, that attach themselves to that position in 2025. Now, it could be a pretty simple proposition for the White Sox front office led by Chris Getz. It could be as simple as bringing back both Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets to form a lefty-righty platoon at first base, seeing what happens there, and then making any sort of future determinations at the position come trade deadline time. I mean, really, when you think about the White Sox offensively, and you go around the diamond, there aren't a lot of spots where you go, that's a guy, and he's going to be there for a long time. You could probably say that for left field and Andrew Benintendi, though if he plays the way he did in the second half of the season last year, it is entirely possible that given where the White Sox are, I mean, if he starts out like that in this coming season, I would imagine teams would come a calling. The Yankees made a move for him 2 years ago, picking him up from the Royals, and while that didn't work out, you know, they were adding him at the deadline to go after a World Series. They got there this year. All that to say, sure, a little bit of a long shot there, but entirely possible. Center field, you've got Luis Robert Jr. until you don't. And at that point, a whole lot of conversation is going to happen about center field. Right field continues to be, unfortunately for the White Sox, a bit of a revolving door, although the way Dominic Fletcher played down the stretch, especially defensively, was eye-opening for a lot of people. He was elite and will probably get consideration for some different awards in and around, you know, the defensive side of things, even though he didn't have a full year of workload out there in right field. The catching position is very much up for grabs. I think that's maybe the next most interesting spot outside of shortstop for the White Sox positionally, what with Edgar Caro down at AAA Charlotte. We'll probably get to the catching spot next week, maybe the week after. Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos are really interesting players for different reasons, obviously. The White Sox picked up Vargas. We saw a lot of him in the season last year. He did not play well, but the White Sox obviously traded for him, thinking that he could be a long-term piece. Where that's going to be is a different question, right? And if you hopefully you get continued development from both Vargas and Ramos, that means that only one of them can play third base and another guy's going to have to find another defensive spot. Hopefully, you know, you'd like to have that versatility, especially for guys, you know, around the 25 and under range. You don't want to lock anybody into the designated hitter spot as the White Sox had to do with Eloy Jimenez, though he was over 25 once he was, you know, really locked into that DH spot. You know, there's some other solutions here and there, but first base is, I think, one that might have its incumbents and may also have the biggest changes for the White Sox in 2025. I think the disparity here is pretty big. Let's take a look at a couple of things first. Let's begin with Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets. One of the resources that I like to use, a lot of people like to use it, I would imagine if you're listening to the show, you're well aware of MLB trade rumors and just how good they are at putting together arbitration estimates for the offseason. For those of you taking part in you know, your own spreadsheets and keeping track of where the White Sox are monetarily and all that good stuff, MLB trade rumors and their arbitration numbers are a pretty good and reliable resource. So to that, this isn't, they're not 100% accurate. Every now and again, there's something that goes haywire with either the offer or the team or the extension or what have you, but they're pretty close to it. So we're going to use these numbers just for our working purposes. Andrew Vaughn is hitting arbitration, and MLB Trade Rumors has him at $6.4 million for the 2025 season. So let's say $6.5 million for Andrew Vaughn. What did Andrew Vaughn do last year? Well, unfortunately, a bit of a mixed bag, as it was for just about every offensive player for the White Sox in 2024. But I think you can definitely say that, unfortunately for Vaughn and the White Sox, the former third overall pick in the MLB draft has not lived up to the power production that you'd hoped coming out of Cal and regarded widely as one of the best collegiate hitters, if not the best and most advanced collegiate bat in that particular draft. The year started out, you know, pretty dismal for Vaughn. He had a 497 OPS in April and March, a 665 OPS in May, and then really turned it on in June and had another good month in September and into October. July was quite cold for Vaughn. August was a little bit better for him. Saw him start to get on track toward the end of the month and make his run in August. In June, Vaughn hit 337 with a 371 on base and slugged 561. Best month of the year by far, a 933 OPS. He hit six home runs. Six of his 19 total came in that June of 2024. September was a good month for him as well. 297 average, 340 on base, slugged 473. Had a real good start to the month, you know, first 3 weeks or so. And then the last week of September into October, a little bit of a different result for Andrew Vaughn. But all that to say, Vaughn's season, the 2024 campaign, saw him hit 246, his career low since his rookie season in 2021, where he was playing out of position. He had an on-base percentage of .297, another career low, and slugged .402, which was, aside from his rookie campaign of 2021, a career low again. 19 home runs, 70 RBI, which did lead the team, second year in a row for Andrew Vaughn to be that RBI guy. And while, you know, this part of the Andrew Vaughn conversation certainly isn't fun, you know, he wasn't good last year, he was definitely a reliable RBI guy. And if you value that as a particular skill set, good on you. If you view RBI as much more of a function of the team around you, and you've got to have guys on base for the most part to drive them in, solo shots will only go so far, that's another perspective and certainly a valid one. OPS Plus is a stat that adjusts all players to the ballparks they're playing in. 100 is league average in a season. Anything over that, better. Anything under that, worse. Andrew Vaughn's OPS Plus in 2024 was 99. Vaughn, you know, it was interesting, kind of looking at some of the more granular data, some of the breakdown sort of stuff. Against fastballs, he hit 283 and slugged 459. Against breaking stuff, he hit 206 and slugged 311. The slider, especially from right-handers, continues to be a really difficult pitch on Andrew Vaughn. And when he's getting spammed, things don't go great for him. The sinker was a pitch he covered really well last year. He actually hit the fastball good in terms of batting average relative to the rest of his numbers. He had 270 against fastballs and slugged 454 on them. But still, when you know that you can get to, you know, the put-away pitch, that slider or that sweeper, as it were, sweepers really through, and I'm going to combine, I think, for a lot of these guys as we go position by position, sliders and sweepers together, especially for right-handers, just because it makes it a bit simpler. But the run value for Vaughn against sweepers was a negative 6, and against sliders a 1. That is certainly not a, well, it's not a powerful profile against that off-speed stuff for Andrew Vaughn. And, you know, I think, I don't know that these two players, Vaughn and Sheets, are linked as they used to be. They've been around for a little bit now. Vaughn having played his fourth year with the White Sox. He played in his age 26 season. He'll turn 27 right at the start of next year. April 3rd is his birthday. And, of course, in arbitration for the first time, which means the White Sox have three more years of control. 25, 26, and 27 of Andrew Vaughn, should they choose to exercise those years. I know a lot of people, a lot of White Sox fans, considering the fact that the team is expected to cut payroll in 2025 and already will, you know, with the likely turning down of options to guys like Nicky Lopez and Yoan Moncada, cutting a lot of money away from things that that had been stuck on the roster for a little while here. You could do more if you wanted as a front office in non-tendering Andrew Vaughn. We'll talk in the next segment about what that might look like and who might get some of the playing time if they went that way. Certainly Gavin Sheets could be a beneficiary, but you know, Sheets' 2024 was kind of the same, good in parts and rough in others. Certainly a disparity in playing time in the first half. Pedro Grifol was using Gavin Sheets in right field, and once Grady Sizemore came aboard as manager after the dismissal of Grifol, almost or rather exclusively for Gavin Sheets, the designated hitter spot or the first base spot, he stopped playing in the outfield, and that seemed to have boosted some of the production. But we'll take a look at the splits, totals, and some of the same stuff for Gavin Sheets here when we come back, and also kind of get into some of the dark horse candidates. Tim Elko, Lenin Sosa, maybe even Brian Ramos or Miguel Vargas at first base for the White Sox in 2025. We'll talk about all that when we come back on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox fans, customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack and get access to opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. Purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. We've been going through first base here this afternoon. Well, we went over the managerial candidates and the latest rumors and reports in the first segment of the show, and now we're kind of digging into first base. We just went through Andrew Vaughn, the season he had, and the decision the White Sox have to make about Vaughn. I would imagine that if that, and we've been using MLB trade rumors arbitration values for these players that are in the arbitration process or will be in the arbitration process soon. They've got Vaughn hitting at about $6.4 million. And while it's a lot of money for a guy that produced the way he did last season, the White Sox do at least have in the past, and I think would continue to trust the work ethic, the ability that may still be in Andrew Vaughn, his ability to produce. Although I think it is fair to say that after 4 years in the bigs, Vaughn isn't a 35 homer guy. I think we're looking at more a 20 to 25 home run kind of dude. And while that's okay, if you're doing everything else for yourself at the plate, Vaughn doesn't play first defensively all that well. Certainly gotten better over the last couple of years. Most of the defensive metrics, though, grade him out as slightly below average. And I think if you wanted to make a change, you could, especially if you are looking, if you're the White Sox and looking to cut some money away from the payroll, to do a number of different things. Exactly what? Well, we'll talk about that as we go here. But if Andrew Vaughn is non-tendered, and I don't expect that to be the case, I think the likely course here is to keep Vaughn at $6.4, $6.5 million, something in that neighborhood. Gavin Sheets would kind of be next up, or still remains as a tandem decision. It could well be Vaughn as the righty guy and Sheets as the lefty guy, you know, kind of a platoon there for both players. Sheets played a lot of first base down the stretch. After Grady Sizemore came in as the interim manager for the White Sox, Sheets was exclusively a designated hitter or first baseman. I think he might have gotten one, like, emergency couple innings out there in right field at some point. I do not believe – no, he did not start a game in right after Grady Sizemore came back or came in as the interim manager. For Gavin, a .233 average, a .303 on base, and a .357 slugging percentage. It was a 90 OPS plus, so 10% below league average, according to that math. He hit 10 home runs. He drove in 45. He only played in, he played in 139 games. He had 501 plate appearances, so pretty much, I don't know, like 75, 80% of a season, I guess. But I would, Gavin's talked a lot about how regular playing time really helps him get into a rhythm, that that's something that he needs. And coming off the bench or playing a little bit more sparsely like he did in the first half of the season, certainly, not what he'd like in terms of his workload, in terms of being able to produce for the team. So to that end, in the second half of the season, he had a, 246 batting average, 281 on base, and a 326 slugging percentage. Actually, his numbers were a little bit better in the first half than they were in the second half. If you go month by month, he had a really good start to the year, getting on base at a 376 clip in April and March, had 11 runs driven in. You know, the White Sox had a turn to him after some injuries, beset guys like Johan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez, and Sheet saw more and more playing time across the diamond. Tailed off quite a bit in May. In June, rebounded a little bit with a 703 OPS. Nothing to shout about or anything like that, but you know, it's still some solid stuff. And then in August, he had a really good month. He had 321, 352 on base, slugged 417. And I think the story for Sheets, although a lefty, is somewhat similar to Andrew Vaughn. You'd like to see more pop. It's not the only thing. I feel like we're going to run close to being a broken record or something like that. The White Sox need more power and more on-base percentage up and down the lineup. At any position, add more on base, add more slugging. There wasn't enough of it from anybody last season, save Andrew Benintendi in the second half of the year. So to that end, especially when you look at first, I need to see that. You know, I want to see that on base. I want to see that slugging percentage. I want to see an elite offensive force over at first base. There are exceptions to the rule, of course, but that's, you know, if you're asking me, hey, Connor, how would you like to build the team? That's how I'd like to do it. Maybe that's just a product of the era that I'm in. Yeah, I saw a little bit of your Wade Boggses, so he played a lot of third and a little bit of first. Mark Graces, you know, that kind of thing, where you could be a high contact, good defense sort of guy and had the power around you the rest of the way. I just think, you know, finding that guy at first, given the defensive demands, a little bit easier than doing it the other way around. Either way, Sheets, according to MLB Trade Rumors, is attached to a $2.6 million arbitration number, and that doesn't seem like something that's going to really hold up the White Sox in terms of decision one way or the other. But I think what is likely to affect their decision-making process when it comes to both Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets is going to be just how they're looking at Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos. I'm guessing a little bit here, but a couple of things. One, I think we know that the White Sox are going to buy out the last year of Johan Moncada's contract, right? It's a $5 million buyout. It's a $25 million option. It's on the White Sox to do it. And unfortunately for Moncada, despite the Instagram posts he might be throwing up, I hope he's in great shape. I hope he has a great 2025. I really do. I enjoy watching the guy play when he's healthy. It just, he hasn't been healthy enough. And given the fact that there just wasn't any playing time for him whatsoever for the White Sox after he was activated from the injured list, I think the team and player have definitely parted ways, if not officially yet. Now, what that means is third base is open, which means I would think that either Miguel Vargas or Brian Ramos are going to be playing that position almost exclusively, right, as a first option in 2025. Yeah, well, we're focusing on first base here, but I think it's worth mentioning, too, if you're looking around the Arizona Fall League right now, we talked about that league 2 weeks ago with Paul Janish, the White Sox development director of the White Sox director of player development, who's in charge of all those prospects down there in the Fall League. Colson Montgomery's tearing it up, and he's also playing a lot of third base. Now, the Glendale Desert Dogs, the teams he's on, have some, you know, major leaguers from the Cincinnati Reds playing a lot of shortstop. It's always tough to, you know, get your preferred hitter to play his preferred position. You got to negotiate that with the different prospects that are on those Arizona Fall League teams. But Montgomery's getting some play at third base, and if the White Sox see him as a guy that can, I don't know, maybe a little bit like Bobby Witt Jr. Remember, Witt came up as a third baseman and was playing third. The Royals had some dudes, Nicky Lopez being one of them, that played some shortstop before he moved over to the shortstop position and has become one of the league's best at that spot. But there could be some third base in Colson Montgomery's future, which only increases the likelihood, in my mind, that the White Sox would have to use first for at bats for either Vargas or Ramos. Now, for both of those players, first, the development has to be there offensively. Vargas had a really rough time in his entire White Sox tenure. It was a difficult thing to watch at times. And while, you know, I called a couple of games that Vargas was that started over at third base, I thought the defense came along a little bit at third, especially. I would guess that the White Sox, though he's probably going to get some work this offseason and in spring training on the outfield, I think infield is where the White Sox seem to see him best. All in all, though, he hit 104 last year for the Sox in 42 games. He slugged 170. He hit two home runs and drove in seven. It was just really rough. It's clear that the plate discipline is there for Vargas. He knows what to swing at and what not to swing at. It was just a hell of a time for him to get the barrel to the baseball. And, you know, after coming over from the Dodgers, where things were going great for him, but he did put up a 108 OPS plus. Not great, but still, you know, league average-ish in 30 games with the Dodgers last year. This year was anything but with the White Sox. They still hold him in high regard, as they should. A lot of outlets still do. And while Vargas isn't going to be found on any prospect lists, having gotten big league time in 23 and 24, he certainly got that the White Sox want to build around. Is that first base? Maybe this is the better question or the better way to ask the question of Chris Getz when we get to the GM meetings. Is it better served to take a look at the young guys, even though Vaughn and Cheats can get it done to a certain degree over at first, just so that you can get a look at all of the young guys? Right? If Colson Montgomery starts the season with the White Sox at short, that leaves third and first available for either Ramos or Vargas or both. And at that point, if the White Sox are, you know, looking to really invest in the development of those young players, that could be the best way they're served to treat those positions. I would think that Ramos, especially, considering he's got the options and that Vargas finished out the year of the big league roster, not that Ramos didn't as well, but you know, he wasn't the September 1st call-up. He was added after an injury. I would think the White Sox are comfortable starting Brian Ramos back at AAA in 2025 and letting him play himself onto the big league roster. I think they still think a lot of the player and that there's quite a bit of potential there for him. But finding that defensive home is going to be a priority. And perhaps the White Sox could, you know, by sending him to AAA, let Vargas work at third. Ramos gets a chance to work at third base down at AAA, and that defense, which is crucial here, especially at that spot, you know, allows one or the other to take the job. You know, if all things are even offensively, then you can look at one and go, well, you're better at third, you're there, and you can maybe head over to first. Is that simplistic? I think so. But when it comes to the prospects or the young players available to the White Sox, it's pretty clear that Vargas and Ramos Vargas is a good combination of the two of them, as we're looking at it here. Vargas and Ramos are those guys that are going to deserve that focus. If not at third, then definitely at first, and that's why we're talking about them here. Also in the system are guys like Tim Elko. Lenin Sosa is having a really good run in winter ball. Elko's in the Arizona Fall League. It is not going well for him right now. A lot of in-zone swing and miss in the scouting profile for Tim Elko. Could be, though, that you know the guy's he's proven everything he's needed to prove at AA and AAA. He has hit for some power. He does have a pretty extreme strikeout issue, but can man the position. And if the White Sox are going to go young, he certainly knows how to handle first base. There could be some free agents that you bring in to maybe push for a job, some NRI types. And I am all for, we'll talk about this more when we come back, I am all for the White Sox spending whatever money that they're going to be able to spend here on the roster in 2025 on flip candidates. And if that's in the rotation, if it's in the bullpen, if it's your starting first baseman, I don't care. Because I want the White Sox to be able to pull in as many future assets as possible come the trade deadline of 2025, and first base may just be a spot they're able to do it. We'll talk about that when we come back on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly, I'm Connor McKnight. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Last couple minutes here on the show, we have been going through the position of first base for the White Sox and, you know, kind of determining what their options are in 2025. Went through the case for Andrew Vaughn, the evidence for Gavin Sheets, the ideas for, you know, guys like Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos, and perhaps even Tim Elko, the internal candidates that the White Sox might have ready for the 2025 season if they don't tender contracts to Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets. I think it's unlikely that both of them get non-tendered, but who knows? It's entirely possible. I mentioned in the last segment that one of the things I'm a big proponent of in situations like the White Sox are in, you know, full-on rebuilds where you're looking to get back as many young players as you possibly can, is spending some short-term cash on players that you think you can fix a little bit or shoulder a bounce back with and then flip at the deadline. I mean, it's what the White Sox did with Eric Fetty, and I think it's probably easier said than done on the pitching side of things, or maybe just easier done on the pitching side of things than on the position player side of things. But there are some free agent candidates that the White Sox might look at in 2025. One of them is Mark Canha, played for the Tigers last season, was picked up by the Giants in a deadline deal. He hit really well for the Giants, 705 OPS in 30-something games, but Canha's been a deadline deal guy twice before. He went from, the Mets to the Brewers in 2023, and then, like I mentioned last season, the Tigers to the Giants. It could be possible that Canha, who played last year at a fairly, if I remember right, a fairly reasonable number, $11.5 million. He's a free agent. You would expect it'll be less than that, and I know the White Sox aren't looking to spend a whole ton of money in free agency, but even at $10 million, flipping them for a prospect or two, buying that kind of service time for a prospect, if you kind of look at the exchange that way, not all that expensive. One of the other names on the list is Bobby Dalbec. Now, this would be a bounce-back kind of candidate. Dalbec was thought of as a pretty high-ranked prospect in the Red Sox organization for a few years, played in 2020, and all the way through 2024, sent back down to the minors, has not produced much for any long stretches in the bigs, but did have a good rookie, introductory campaign in 2020, pandemic season being what it was. He's been cut loose. Dalbec is going to be, 30 halfway through next season, so a guy that could handle a little bit of first base there as well. J.D. Davis, a guy that bounced around a little bit last season and has had some recent success. J.D. Davis ended his year with the Yankees, picked up by the Oakland A's last season after a weird contract dispute with the Giants in the offseason. Going back to 2023, put up a 104 OPS plus year, good in Oakland, rough and I believe hurt with the Yankees last season. J.D. Davis has been there. Anthony Rizzo is playing right now for the Yankees in the World Series. Could be a free agent. He has dealt with all kinds of health issues, back specifically. Gio Urshela is a guy that's, you know, not going to set the world on fire offensively, but can play a couple of different positions fairly well on the infield. He's played a little third. He's played a little second. He's played a little first. I think he's even played just a little bit of outfield here over the last 3-4 seasons. I guess you go back to 2019 for his last outfield work. But Gio Urshela, last year, in some time with both the Tigers and Braves, put up an 82 OPS plus and was pretty good for the Braves down the stretch when they had a lot of injuries they were trying to cover for. Urshela could be a guy, the White Sox. You know, and I think some of these dudes, I'm not even talking about shelling out. I think Mark Canha would get a big league deal. Some of these guys, whether it's Dalbec or Urshela or maybe even J.D. Davis, could be acquired on minor league deals or maybe even non-roster invitees, probably less so for Davis or Urshela, but maybe for Dalbec you could do something like that. And You know, those are the types of ways the White Sox are able to be flexible because of the playing time they can dole out if indeed they make the decision to move on from either Andrew Vaughn or Gavin Sheets, or perhaps both. Who knows? It's a season of a winter of change here for the White Sox as we head into spring training next year. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. Big thanks to Jack McGrath, our producer this afternoon. I'm Connor McKnight. We'll catch you next week after Northwestern football. We're going to have the Northwestern Wildcats against the Purdue Boilermakers, and the show will be on after that game ends. It kicks at 11, so stay tuned for White Sox Weekly at some point next week, Saturday afternoon. Have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll catch you next Saturday for more White Sox Weekly.